Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today on WYPR.
Yay!
You can reach us.
Yeah, it's fun to be live.
We have to do this more often.
I love to be live. I know.
You can reach us, 410-662-8780. And you can also send us emails. We do these programs from time to time because we get a stack of emails built up.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to answer them. There's more than one person that wants an answer to a question. And, you know, Cindy, I was reading this one that I thought was really curious, and I thought it really kind of informs a topic that I had was thinking as a background
That's
for
good.
Today.
Okay.
I was thinking kids and food.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen kids eat foie gras.
Yeah, we have.
On a regular basis.
Escargot.
We've seen kids only want buttered pasta noodles.
Mm-hmm. True.
We've seen the entire range of what kids are capable of eating. So we wondered why, and parents love to blame themselves about things. So this is an email from Susan of Baltimore. I've had a handful of traumatic food experience from when I was a child. My mother used to cook frozen fish and serve it with canned green beans. I still to this day have trouble with both of those foods, even now as an adult. I have a 1-year-old, and this is not a tradition I want to pass down to her. I want her to love and appreciate good food so that she does not have this culinary hurdle to overcome like I do. What can I do to make sure I do not imprint the same kind of negative associations with food that my mother gave to me?
I would just like to say that even though my mother was a great cook, I totally identify with this because there were a number of things that I did not like as a child. And you know this because you were part of the process of my learning to eat things mostly because of our travels to Europe.
Well,
and
I
eating,
used to tease
you know,
the bejesus out of it.
Well, there's a big difference between eating fresh fish off the coast of Spain that just came out of the water and is prepared by someone lovingly and knowingly, knowledgeably, and the seafood is just some of the best you'll ever get, than as she had the experience. And frankly, I did too, because part of my childhood, I grew up in the Midwest, in Indiana, and I mean, we only had frozen fish unless it was something that came out of a local creek or river, and obviously, I wasn't getting that at home. So, you know, I grew up. We joke about it, but I grew up on cod and scrod, and I absolutely hated fish because of it. I'm sure it was frozen. My poor mother, you know, I'm sure did her very, very best to cook it to her ability. But, you know, also I think back then people thought you had to cook everything to death. So I'm sure that cod and scrod was in the oven for 30 minutes.
Scrod devoid of moisture does not sound like a sexy seafood
dish. There was nothing good about it. So, and honestly, I get her thing too because, I mean, I grew up on actually green beans were the only vegetable I would eat. I hated everything else. And I turned out to be a chef. So I guess there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, Susan, your child
could end up being a chef.
Well adjusted, regardless of what you do.
Right.
Eventually, long term, with encouragement. So we're live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780. Toll free, if you need that, is 866-661-9309. And you can tell us what you're doing to try to feed your kids and make them healthier.
Did you
grow up with an unusual approach from your parents?
Right. Well, it's funny that it's also funny that you brought this up because I saw one of my doctors has moved to New York and she came to the restaurant last night and I was so excited to see her. And she's become a very good friend, obviously. And when she walked in, I said, "How's your daughter?" She's almost 2 years old now, which I can't believe how fast time goes by. And she said she's eating olives and, you know, all fish and everything. And she said anything we put in front of her, this child will eat. She is amazing.
Yeah, she sounds like she was related to my kid.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's fascinating. So
olives
I mean,
and mushrooms are high on Dell's list.
Yeah, that's great. And I don't, you know, I think in the end, it all comes back to if it tastes good, then maybe they'll like it. I don't know. I don't have children, so I can't help at all with this conversation, but as a chef, I would suggest, and having had my own experiences as a child, absolutely hating a lot of food. I mean, you know, it probably was because the fish was not fresh and overcooked, or that green beans are horrible out of the can. I mean, quite frankly, especially when you're a kid. I mean, I remember thinking, those are called wax beans, right? Because they taste like wax to me. I remember literally thinking that when I was a child. So, you know, I mean, if you make good fresh food, which is so much more available to us now.
Wax beans do not taste like wax. What other food do you think tastes like it sounds? I mean,
I don't know, but I definitely.
There's no question you're the baby of your family. Oh, my God.
Oh, we had I think I probably said this before, but we had a toy dachshund, and her bed little basket was right behind my chair at the dinner table. And all I can say is thank goodness for her, because that dog was well fed. A lot of my food from my plate went to that dog as sneakily as I possibly could.
Listeners, please call us 410-662-8780 for confession. Those of you that fed your pets. And if you think you got away with it without your parents knowing what was going on.
Yeah, my other trick was my napkin. Oh, I have to go to the bathroom. Yeah, there goes the food into the, you know, I'm sure my, whatever. I grew up with the kind of family that you, if you didn't eat it, you had to sit there until you were done. And there was no way I was eating that stuff.
Do you think you tricked them?
I don't know. It worked, so I guess I did.
Well, did they turn
the blind
eye?
Maybe they just
eye?
Didn't confront it. Yeah, there's no confrontation. But I mean,
we were not
end,
monitored, so.
I just think our you know, the good thing for the lady is that, as I was starting to say, what is available to us is so much better than when you and, well, at least I don't know how old she is, but at least when you and I were kids. I mean, look at farmers market now. I mean, even from 20 years ago here, the difference in the farmers markets and how many there are and what's available.
Yeah, my great grandmother wanted to go to market.
Sure.
That meant Lexington Market. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
Or an Araber who was going down the street.
Sure.
That still happened on my street when I was a kid. It's still only in parts of the city. But,
and what would they have? They were selling vegetables only? Or?
Mostly produce.
Okay.
And you had your guy, you know. Huh. Ours was Big Hank.
Well, and that's how it was in the old days in Charleston. Yeah. You know, the people, the street vendors would come through the neighborhoods and they would call out, you know, sheet crabs, which was the prized crab, which was the female crab, which is where the soup comes from, you know, or shrimp or whatever they had. You know, it was all seafood or vegetables predominantly, and some of them I'm sure had meats, but I think it was predominantly seafood. But yeah, they would go all through the seats with their wagons.
But for my great-grandmother, she was born in 1890, and she was born in a little town in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
She was very used to buying directly from farms, going to, you know, market once a week.
Well, and she was a good cook, so.
Yeah, she was a terrific cook and was used to cooking everything.
Mm-hmm.
And using every part of the animal. So the convenience food thing, she's like, that's a bunch of bunk. I don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing she would buy is pre-prepared cakes. She liked them.
Well, they are nice.
I don't think she liked to bake so much.
Well, and also, did she preserve herself too? So, and if she did, then therefore you had all that wonderful stuff at your fingertips. What it all comes down to is quality of product. I mean, that's my story. You know, my story as a chef is everything is about quality of product. I strive, we all strive to get the best product in the door, and then you respect it and do the best job of executing it, you know, and getting it on the plate so that's in its best state, that it is enhanced in its best, to its best form. You know, it's always about that bite of all the things on the plate.
A portrait of neuroses could have been the first time I went to make grilled cheese for my daughter, and I was thinking too much about how I would imprint her forever
okay.
with her expectation of what the bread would be like.
Wow.
And did I use butter?
I think you're putting yourself
and
under
what kind
too
of
much
cheese
stress.
Was in there.
Unnecessary stress there. Boy.
You know, I never do that, right?
Right.
So anyway, what happened? What happened was I made it with cheddar cheese and some manchego and butter,
yeah, it was
butter
really,
and whole wheat
really good.
Bread and browned it nicely. And yeah, it was good.
Does she ask for it now? I mean, does she love grilled cheese?
She loves every variation of grilled cheese. The thing that hurts my feelings a little bit, her favorite grilled cheese, I guess it doesn't hurt my feelings. Maybe it does. Her favorite grilled cheese comes from Panera. So we'll just move on to a question before I cry. Mindy, who left a question, How can families bring back the joy of cooking to get away from pre-prepared packaged meals to include the child in the cooking experience?
Well, I can tell you from...
It's a great question. Yeah. I think people want to do that.
Sure, of course. I mean, I think short of putting a knife in your child's hand, which obviously none of us wanted, no one would want to do.
Put a knife in your child's
or
hand.
Putting a hot pan in, you know, obviously that's the fear with having children in the kitchen, which is why I've never done cooking classes for kids. I can't imagine either one of those things. But
our insurance agent thanks you.
but, you know, when I was a kid, I was shucking the corn that was going into dinner or, you know, taking the beans out of the shells. So I think allowing them to work with raw product with their hands or, you know, say making bread. Obviously, they're not going to hurt themselves making bread.
You know what they love to do?
What?
It's from my 3.5-year-old. Mix things, to pour things into containers, and to scoop things out of containers and put them in something else.
Well, that seems like fun.
It's sort of like all the measuring and the mixing part. That's pretty fun, and they usually have enough coordination to do the mixing part. The first couple of times, the first couple of times I got mixed on my shirt, and that's that's going
to
happen.
That's fine. Well, yeah, you have to. As the lady says, it needs to be fun. You know, the joy of cooking.
Something as silly as like helping mix pancakes, and then the kid eats the pancakes.
Oh yeah,
and you put fruit with the pancakes. Right. Then they pick them out. Maybe you slice them up. Then they get to toss them on the pancakes.
Yeah, yes.
You know, that's a daddy and I made breakfast.
Oh, definitely. Well, she says
like
getting away from prepackaged and pre-prepared meals. So that's what you do. You know, as you say, you're actually going through the process with them, and anything that's not dangerous, you know, allow them to be involved in. Well, and also, I mean, honestly, this probably sounds stupid, but still one of my very favorite things to do in the kitchen is to stir things. And I mean, if you give them a stool and you're obviously monitoring them and they're not too little, you know, allowing them to actually stir, the process that keeps you from moving forward with preparing the meal. They're right next to you. You're prepping right next to them. You know, hopefully that's also something. Well, and also we all have happy memories of making cookies with our mothers. I hope, or maybe a lot of people do, you know, but that's fun. I mean, how can you not be more excited about the end product? And as you said, mom or dad and I just made cookies together, and here we are eating them. I mean, it's just, yeah, I think it's working with cold product, making bread, making pasta, things like that.
Now I want cookies. You know, I have a cookie problem. So you can reach us 410-662-8780. You can email us if you like, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And if you need, toll-free, 866-661-9309. I'd love to know your thoughts on kids and food. Or did you have traumatic memories? Did you have great memories? Do you have a secret recipe that parents should know for kids to get them to try things?
I remember, you know, I said something negative about my mother, who was a fantastic cook. But, you know, my grandmother also was a very, very good cook. And I remember loving things like hog maw, which is the lining of the pig's stomach. It's a traditional Pennsylvania Dutch meal that's stuffed with sausage and potatoes.
And nothing sounds as attractive as
exactly.
Hog maw.
And when I would go to school and tell people, you know, we had hog maw for dinner, people would make fun of me or laugh. Like, you know, hey, that's the other thing. You know, it's kind of like, wow, some families' traditions are very different from others, and there needs to be a level of respect for that. And those are the things that are so important. Is if I had children, I would definitely have taught them how to make hog maw. I would have taught them how to make all the things that I loved growing up: sauerkraut and pork. Pot pie the way that my grandmother made it. Go ahead.
The thing that I wonder, and that brings in it's the beginning of the thing I wonder about peer pressure and social pressure on how food is perceived, how different food is perceived. I mean, my daughter is loves octopus, loves calamari, loves all kinds of fish. Honestly, the stronger the better. There's certain vegetables she likes, leafy green vegetables she doesn't like because it's kind of, you know,
weird
in her mouth.
Yeah. Although octopus isn't.
Oh, no,
which is
no,
kind of amazing, isn't that? But what a statement. What a statement. That's
so,
kind of incredible.
But
that's wonderful.
Wonder
interesting.
If she's at school having lunch and some kid says,
yeah,
you know.
Ooh, you have octopus.
So what did you have for dinner?
Yeah.
Octopus.
Yeah. Right. You're right. That's why I brought it up. I mean, I will never forget telling somebody I had hog maw for dinner, which I loved. And suddenly I felt like, oh, what, are we weird or something? You know, I mean, that's not right. So, yes, well, your culture is, well, yeah.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, it's calls from you all, 410-662-8780, or emails. We have a list of emails that we're going to get to in the second segment. You can reach us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And coming in the third segment, Cindy, you're going to want to do some warming up, some running around the studio, preparing yourself for a chef's challenge.
All right, Tony.
All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, we have a couple of calls we're about to get to in just a second. I had one email note that's interesting, kind of building on what we're talking about. We're talking about kids and food. The program is live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And this is Karen in Hunt Valley. She says... Sometimes it's developmental, as children's taste buds change constantly while they're growing. Try the new food again in a couple weeks. Ask them just to try one bite. Keep trying.
That's great. Thank you.
Trying is what it is when your kid won't eat. It's funny, the feeling that, like, oh my God, they have to eat.
I'm sure. Yeah. I remember one of my chef de cuisines, his daughter at some point when she was little wouldn't eat anything and only drank milk. And we would stand there and talk about it, you know, while we were waiting for service to start, because he was so upset.
Yeah,
they just didn't know what to do.
It does.
I can't imagine how. Yeah, that's kind of scary, actually.
So let's go to Lynn in Annapolis. Lynn, you're on the air.
Hi, it's such a pleasure to speak with you. I've been listening to you both for years. That's wonderful.
Hi, Lynn.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
I'm a teacher, but I'm in my 60s. I grew up in Baltimore on Reisterstown Road, and my mom was from Virginia, and she insisted that my brother and I grow things in the backyard. She said, life's not worth living unless you can put your hands in the dirt.
There you go.
So we had garden in the backyard, and then she and my father and my grandmother helped us pick things in the backyard. My grandmother was Pennsylvania Dutch. She would pick dandelion leaves in the spring and say that was her tonic, and mix them with scrambled eggs. We're always a little when all this happened. And my mom bought the Betty Crocker cookbooks for juniors, or junior cookbook, I guess it was. And my brother and I stood on chairs and helped in the kitchen. And then there was an annual ritual of Christmas cookies. But Arlington Methodist Church is right across the street from our house. And so many church suppers. I really love to cook, and I really love to garden. And going over there, walking over to North Hall at the church and helping to prepare for oyster and ham suppers, snapping the beans, peeling the potatoes, feeling a part of a kitchen and a communal operation was so much fun.
That's great. So
I just wanted to throw those ideas out.
Those are wonderful memories.
That's awesome. Congratulations to your mom.
And also for kids, there's the no thank you helping. All right, take care.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks for calling in.
That's great, Len. Thank you so much.
Let's go to Barbara in Baltimore.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Thanks for the program. And I just wanted to make a few comments. You asked if anybody had had ideas that worked well with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
So my daughter is now all grown up. But she seems to enjoy cooking and food, and good cooking and good food, even though I think that can be difficult working a full-time schedule and managing it, as it always was. And I raised her in New York, even though I live in Baltimore. But I think I did two things that I think were good in retrospect. I don't know how she'd feel about them, but one was insisting that we have dinner every night. And I was a single parent, but, you know, there was always a rule that you had to sit down, and I often thought, for only 5 minutes? But it was just like, okay, that was enough.
Oh,
like, we just had that time and enjoyed the food. And then also there was a group called Urban Organic. I don't know whether they still exist, but I'm sure there's things like them. And I had organic, like, vegetables and fruits delivered, like a box
That's
of them
great.
Every week. And so there was just something about the pleasure. And she was a picky eater, very picky eater, when she was very young, which is scary as a mother. Mm-hmm. And I think that the third thing would be just to try to relax. And if you relax and enjoy food and enjoy preparing and the ingredients and having good quality, I think it gets passed on.
Sure.
Or if it doesn't, it's not your fault.
Well, and it was probably good for both of you to have that. Well, very good for both of you to have that time to relax, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Barbara,
yes.
When you said can actually sit down, I'm relating to that very strongly. My daughter is always performing, and she's running around, and just to get her still long enough to actually pick up a fork and actually put some of the food in her mouth. Oh. That is the only difficult thing about feeding her.
Right, exactly. Well, yeah, sitting down is, for some kids, like, it doesn't happen that frequently.
Mm-hmm. No.
So I wasn't really exaggerating when I said 5 minutes. I mean, I think it would be ideal to have it be longer, and it usually was longer. Mm-hmm. But I still just think having that established as a value that, you know, you come together at the table, you bring other guests and if you can, and, you know, you just enjoy it, and it's a regular thing that you do.
Yeah, you learn a lot of things at the table.
That's great. Thank you very much for calling, Barbara.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
Let's go to Sandy in Severn. Sandy, you're on the air.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. I love your show,
Thank you.
I have to sometimes disagree with some of your wine choices. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well back you asked about sushi and wine. You forgot plum wine.
What was that?
That was a couple weeks ago. You were talking about sushi and...
No, but what was the wine we forgot?
Plum wine.
Yeah.
That's Japanese.
Which is very traditional.
Very traditional.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that I have to like it with sushi.
That was delicious.
Just like you don't have to like kondryo with sushi.
Yeah, but I do. Actually, what I was calling about, though, was you were talking about getting kids to eat.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. I grew up with two omas, grandmothers, that... had vegetable gardens. Actually, they were probably closer to vegetable farms than a garden. I mean, it's the entire backyard
awesome.
With nothing but vegetables, and it's all
nice.
Sorts of vegetables. It's really hard not to want to eat something that you helped your grandma grow.
Absolutely.
And I ate stuff like Brussels sprouts, rhubarb in pies, kohlrabi, celery root, stuff you didn't normally find in the stores, as well as tomatoes. Peppers, snap peas, beans of all types, and try to do that also with our kids and with our grandkids is when you grow the food, it's that much more that you want to eat your own produce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have a theme going here.
When you see it, when you handle it, when you, you know, there's a certain joy in it just being there. You know,
it's
awesome.
It took me forever to realize, you know, what stuff looked like in the stores was the same things that my grandmother would pull out of the ground. it took me for years before I would eat fennel from the store.
Interesting.
Or celery root or something like that. It didn't look the same in the stores.
No, it doesn't. When you grow up eating things in the season, you're sort of disgruntled when you see things not in season.
Like tomatoes in January.
Doesn't work. Not happening.
No.
There's no way to ship them in January. They're not going to be ruined by the time they get to you.
I grew up in outside of Cleveland, Ohio. We used to have more acreage under glass in greenhouses when I was growing up. I guess I'm giving away my age. But I do remember going with my grandmother to some of the greenhouses and going through where you could pick your own, and she would actually sniff the plant before she would pick from it.
Oh, yeah.
And some of those greenhouse tomatoes were actually pretty good, but the stuff they have in the store today, it doesn't taste anything like it.
Yeah, no, the whole ball game of trying to, if a tomato is worthwhile off season, you smell where the stem was or smell the stem. If that smells like sunshine, then, you know, if it really smells like the plant, then it's going to have some flavor. If it doesn't, you got nothing.
Oh, I was teaching some folks yesterday at the store about picking peaches, and they're, you know, trying to feel around, and all I was doing is picking up and just sniffing where the stem was.
Yep. Well done.
And they're like, what are you doing? I said, check to see if it's ripe, because it's not going to get any riper.
Yeah, you got it, Sandy. Thanks so much for the call.
Yes, thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Have a good Sunday.
So let's move on to Maureen in Catonsville. Maureen, how are you?
Hi, Maureen.
Hi, how are you? It's nice to speak with you, Tony and Cindy.
Thank you.
Good to have you on.
A suggestion and a question.
Okay.
All of our kids and grandkids are really adventuresome eaters, which makes me feel great. But
good.
When our
That's
kids,
awesome.
Who are no longer kids, were little, I would kind of start by making what we would now call a crudité tray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With lots of vegetables that they would not have eaten cooked, but I would put them on a tray and have a dip was always important.
Sure.
But I tried to make a real nutritious dip, like a yogurt based, and I'd put it on the side of the counter and then turn my back, and I would be cooking dinner. And as long as they could, you know, sneak it in behind my back, then, you know,
That's
it was
cute.
Like a twofer. They were getting away with something, and they were eating something nutritious.
That's great.
Can I ask you a question, Maureen?
Yes.
How long did you work for the CIA?
Right. Well, you know, if you're a mom and a grandmom, you got to know the tricks of the trade.
There you go.
Wow, that's awesome. That's a good tip.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the other thing is that some of these kids who have grown up around people working in restaurants eat the weirdest things. And I remember two of the girls who love escargot talked the rest of their cousins into loving escargot, too.
That's great.
That's positive peer pressure.
Love it.
peer pressure is wonderful.
Now, you had a question as well?
I do, and the question is kind of off the subject of kids, but my son-in-law is a chef. He's CIA-trained and has a restaurant in upstate New York. And he is looking forward in the fall to taking some time off for an inspiration trip. He does very much the kind of farm-to-table cooking, and I'm not objective, but I think he's a very talented chef.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think the most mouth-watering parts of your programs are when you and Cindy talk about these wonderful trips you've taken through Paris and the south of France and then all through Italy. But if you only had a little more than a week and you wanted to get some inspiration, what would you suggest?
I mean, I think...
Different places.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Because for me, I would immediately say Paris or some part of France. But I don't know, since I don't know him, I don't, you know, is his food more American or does he have some European influences or Asian influences? What are the influences on his cooking?
It's so interesting because they love sushi. And I'm seeing some Asian influence in his cooking now.
Mm-hmm.
But I say, it's pretty much that farm to table, so
okay.
You know, more American, I would say.
I would say whatever he is inspired by, if he can afford and have the time to go to Europe or to Asia, you know, wherever his interest is, and really go to places where some of the best chefs are. And that could be Spain and going to some of Adria's restaurants and seeing what he's doing, because some of his restaurants now are very casual, or, you know, again, going to the countryside in France or going to Bocuse, going to an older, highly recognized, well-established restaurant like Bocuse and outside of Lyon, or, you know, it's any time spent eating someone else's excellent food is inspirational. And also hitting the markets and getting to speak with winemakers and speaking as much as you can with local people to really have them either prepare food for you or talk to you about their cooking. Those are my inspirations.
I think for people, what I would recommend going sort of depends on the type of what inspires that cook personally. If it is a matter of refinement and manipulation of product, then there are places in France that I would encourage them to go. If it is wanting to feel very, very close to very, very honest product from the earth and traditions that are maybe a little bit simpler, but very satisfying, there are places in Italy where I would encourage mm-hmm. them to go.
For sure.
And for diversity, Italy for diversity, no question. There's more cohesion to French cooking regardless of a butter-olive oil divide.
Italy, Spain, or France would be. But, you know, I've never been to Asia, so I don't know. You know, I can't suggest anything.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call, Maureen.
Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you. I'm going to make sure he listens to the podcast.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks. Yeah, if you want to listen to any of our podcasts, you can go on the Former Wolf page on the WYPR site, wypr.org, and download this or any other programs. There's a bucket of them nowadays, isn't there, Luke? Yeah. So Luke being our producer, our fine producer. So let's go to Jackie in Baltimore, please.
Good morning.
How are you?
I love listening to your show.
Awesome. Thanks.
I want to talk about kids and knives. I mean, to be honest, too many of my adult friends don't have proper knives. But anyway, I started my daughter off. She was about 3 years old, and I was always cutting up a salad. So she'd be on a stool next to me. I'd have my knife, and she'd have a plastic knife with a nice serrated edge. And actually, at one point, we had a half whiskey barrel on our 16th floor balcony. So she'd go out and pick a couple of cherry tomatoes and a cucumber. And she'd stand alongside of me, cutting up and making a salad. Pepper, you know, cucumber that we just picked, and tomatoes. And then by the time she was 5 or 6, she had a good paring knife. And she's continued. And when we had a house and a garden, I mean, just understanding how fruit or vegetables happen, she ended up cross-pollinating hollyhocks. So, I mean, the closer you can get to the basics, but I think knives are just staying with the concept of knives. People shouldn't be afraid of knives. And it's the dull knife that cuts.
Is
you know
it,
what I mean?
The dull knife Absolutely. Is the one that terrifies
the most
in
dangerous
the kitchen.
Knife
when
is a
she
dull
left
knife.
The house, she left with a chef's knife and a paring knife.
That's so great.
And
good for you.
And she wanted
Good
to get into making bread.
Wow.
And I'm an Orthodox Jew, and making challah. So as a widow with a young kid, we were easy guests. And she would, you know, get to taste everybody else's homemade challah.
That's nice.
So she experimented, and making 5 pounds of bread. So now she had to figure out when does she want to freeze it. I mean, already formed or not formed or already baked and freezing it. But her breads, and then continuing onward, because she's you know adventurous and so forth. She does all kinds of cooking. And I'll just mention she became a vegetarian when she was in second grade. A friend of mine took her to a zoo, and she decided she's not going to eat any of these animals.
Wow, interesting.
I mean, I could go on and on, but I really think that people who are eating processed food have probably never tasted great homemade food.
Yeah, no, processed food is definitely, it cuts the connection out. Jackie, hey, thanks very
Thank
much
you
for
so
the
much.
Call.
Yeah, I mean, so teach your kids how to cut with a serrated knife.
That's good.
Yeah,
like
that's smart advice. Well, you can reach us. We're live today. The call-in number is 410-662-8780. We're talking about food and kids and what they eat, what they don't eat, why they eat it, what in the world happened to you when you were a kid with food. Toll-free is 866-661-9309. Or email foremanwolf@wypr.org. We'll be back in just a few moments. Welcome back to Foreman the Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780. We're talking about kids and food. What do you do to get them to eat? What do you do to get them to sit at the dinner table? How do you get them to eat nutritiously over time? And how did you grow up?
It seems like we've learned from everyone that gardening is a great start, which makes, of course, a lot of sense. I mean, I know for me, I bought a farm 2 years ago now, and I've worked with food for how many years now? And
do you eat better now?
Do
you do a better job of eating your vegetables?
The point is that watching something grow from seed or from a young plant, and you just, I mean, I've always had a great, well, as a chef, I've had a great deal of respect for food, obviously. It is what I work with every day, but to see it growing from a seed is absolutely, truly amazing. And you love it all the more for what it is and appreciate it all the more. So I think that would be an amazing lesson for a child.
No question. Let's go to a couple of callers. I know that you would like to skip past the chef's challenge later on, but you're not going to get out of it.
Tony.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's my name. Mm-hmm. Bobby in Baltimore. Bobby, hello.
Hi, Bobby.
Hi, Tony and Cindy. I absolutely love this program you have on today.
Thank you.
Having grown up in a very large family, we sat down to dinner, all nine of us, around a very small table every night. And when I raised my son, that was just as important for he and I to sit down each night. I know it isn't easy when they're bouncing around when they're 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. But I think the best part about it was I got to hear about his day. And he's a grown adult now. And one of the things we had going on when he was a child, and certainly when I was a child, was you always had what we called no thank you helpings. If something was served and you said you didn't like it, we always said you always had to have at least a taste. And if you didn't like it, you didn't have to finish eating it. But you always had to taste it, because my mom always said your tastes change as you grow up. What I find interesting now is that now my son is an adult. And when he and I go out to eat or eat at home at his house, he cooks things that I've never had before.
Oh, that's great.
And I may turn my nose up to it. And he looks at me and he says, Mom, you have to have a no thank you helper.
There you go.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Way to go, Sonny boy.
Yeah, but it's really, I can't say how important it is, the things that come up over the dinner table that may not ever get spoken about if we didn't have that set time every single day. I mean, certainly there were times when our schedules were different and we did different things, but for the most part, it was definitely a daily routine to sit and have dinner together, whether it be nine of us or two of us.
And that's great, Bobby. Thank you very, very much.
Really hitting that at the home run.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you. We need to do quick calls because we've got to get to a chef's challenge. Jamie in Baltimore.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Good.
I had a question about a new diagnosis in my family. My 8-year-old daughter was just diagnosed with celiac disease, and our doctor said that we should switch our whole family to a gluten-free diet. Which we're just starting the process of just this past week. I was wondering if you had any advice on recipes to try or on places that we could go to eat around Baltimore that would be kind of good for a gluten-free child.
Well, job one is going to be visit a nutritionist and find out exactly what all of your parameters are, and that's something we can't help with. I'm going to bet that you guys become incredibly good at making risotto. among other things, but that really it begins with a nutritionist.
Yeah.
So thanks very much for the question. I'm sure it's one that many people are dealing with. Thanks, Jamie. Lynn in Baltimore.
Hi.
How are you?
I used to live in Japan, and one of the ways that mothers there would get their kids to eat, I guess, nutritious meals, was to make bentos, these beautiful little lunches with all kinds of cartoon characters and scenery. And I wonder if you can just speak about that. And I love your show, too.
I mean, that's, I can tell you from my experience right now, cartoons are one of the most appealing, if not most appealing thing in the entire world. So that's that's just smart out of Japan.
Good.
So I'm afraid we're not going to be able to get to every call. I've got one or two emails to try to answer. Janet in Roland Park, I love summer chilled soups. My personal favorite is Vichyssoise. Do you have any other chilled soup recipe recommendations for me to try?
I make a cucumber and avocado soup, and cucumbers are coming into market right now and just pureed in the food processor or in a blender. The cucumbers, peel them, cut them into smaller pieces. Avocado, dice it into smaller pieces. Salt is important, some sort of acid such as lime juice, and a little bit of corn oil to sort of give it richness, and salt and pepper. And it's really, really good. And that is really good with crab product, too. So if you want to make like a little crab salad with that, that would be delicious. And I'm making a lot of chilled fruit soups right now. We have nectarines, white peaches, yellow peaches. So I do a lot of that as well.
And here
it's
is your chef's challenge.
Okay.
Yeah. See how you doing. This is, we have to do speed round here.
Okay. Potatoes, tomatoes, what's that word? Cherry. Ruby red watermelon, fresh mint, swordfish filet, jalapeno pepper, cilantro, day-old bread, U15 shrimp, white beans, chicken stock, garlic, no dairy, extra virgin olive oil, nothing. What does it say? Nothing works in the kitchen.
Nothing works. Here's your condition. Nothing works in the kitchen.
Go ahead. Tell me what it says.
Essentially, you can build a fire, and you have a plancha you can put on the fire.
Okay.
I've got Argentina on the
That's
brain.
Fun.
Okay.
All right.
So you dig
That's
a hole.
Good.
You dig a hole. You build a fire.
I dig a hole.
And on that slow fire.
And I build a fire.
You've got
a
farm now.
Yeah.
You can do that.
I can do it. Sure.
Yeah. And you either hang stuff on a string over it, or you put a plancha directly on the fire.
Well, if I have white beans.
Meaning a big iron
Okay,
plate,
well, I need to put a pot on that fire with the, since I have extra virgin olive oil, which this is a little strange, but I'll saute the garlic in that, which I would not normally do. Just work it very gently, add chicken stock, and add the white beans. So that's got to go get on the stove first. I'll add the jalapenos to it, seeds and all, lightly chopped, and that's pretty good. So that'll be working. Definitely do the swordfish fillets and probably 8-ounce pieces because I like to cook swordfish to medium rare. And I'll sear it nicely on the plancha. Make a little salad in the meantime with the mint, the watermelon, and the cherry tomatoes and the extra virgin olive oil, which will be a lot of fun. A little light salt, a little pepper. The potatoes I'm going to slice super thin, and right when I'm done with the swordfish, I'll just pop those on the La Plancha, brown them, cook them, and that's what will get served with the white bean stock, whatever you want to call it, white bean broth stew, I guess, white bean stew, and that swordfish, and have that wonderful
swordfish
little fresh salad.
Swordfish and white bean stew sounds good to me.
Yeah, that sounds good too. Actually, I may have to make that tomorrow. All right. Oh, your turn. Here you go. That was fast.
Yeah, that was super speedy. That took you dug that hole and built that fire very quickly.
Well, yeah, that was already done.
All right. Sunday supper. Sunday supper for six. One whole rockfish. You keep giving me whole fish. That's fine. One whole rockfish. Out of season locally, that's all. All local zucchini, heirloom tomato, green onions, basil, sage, rosemary, eggplant, cantaloupe, watermelon, cucumber, local lettuce, olive oil, kosher salt, black peppercorns, 3 pounds of lump crab meat, 3 pounds of North Carolina shrimp. So this is a little seafood festival. The shrimp, I want to have the shrimp as an appetizer, sort of a snack almost, and do a little bruschette with them, with eggplant and zucchini and hit everything with olive oil. I wish I had some black olives for that. But marinate those shrimp just in a little bit of oil. And if I had a little bit of dried chili, I would use that. And grill those guys and serve that as those bruschette as a first course. The rockfish, I'm very tempted to be old school about it and stuff it with the crab meat.
Mm-hmm.
So you clean out that cavity, season the cavity of the inside of the rockfish. Use the basil to do that. Rosemary and sage are too strong for that fish. And can I have a lemon? Yeah, because it's written, no, I can't have a lemon. So, yeah, I don't. What I wish I had was a little bit of acid. Do I have leftover white wine?
No.
No.
That's all you have.
Okay.
That's it.
Jeez.
That's all you get.
Tough today.
Figure it out.
Tough today. Yeah. It's
come on, Tony.
Coach Richard, extra virgin and crab meat. And stuff.
So tell me something. How do you put, how do you do the crab meat in the fish? How are you going to go about doing that?
Well, you give me no breadcrumb or anything like that. Can I have day old bread?
No, you can't have anything
can't
that's not on the list.
You're basically going to have to use the oil and make it into sort of almost like a meatloaf looking sort of business out of the crab meat and tuck it in there. And then honestly, the best thing to do would be to seal that fish back up as best you could.
There you go.
And
that's why it's called a chef's challenge.
Yeah, roast it.
You can't have everything.
Roast it hot. Roast it hot for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Know, that's
good.
What else? That needs a side dish. I've got cantaloupe and watermelon. I'm going to use that for dessert. Honestly, they're so good this time of the year. If I could wish for watermelon, I would wish for what? I want the orange watermelon. I had orange watermelon last year. It was unbelievably good.
Orange watermelon.
Yeah.
Are we going to get it this year?
Yeah, we're going to get it this year. It's like 10 days away.
Good.
That's
ooh,
just
good.
The rubies are showing up now, and they're
that's
very
exciting.
Good.
This is so exciting right now.
That just tells you that the other
heirlooms
guys are
starting to come in.
Yeah, and a can of a jalapeno to make an orange watermelon and jalapeno salad, which is great. Or any of the cilantro that it wants, or garlic. Because you're not giving it to me. Thanks a lot. What a sweetheart. The green onions you would grill and serve those as a garnish for that fish. And what else? The heirloom tomato. Still base. I could use rosemary for that. No. No, thank you. I tell you what I could use. I could use the rosemary for the skewers for the shrimp with the eggplant and zucchini for the brochettes. Local lettuce, cucumber. I mean, I guess you could toss the cucumber, watermelon, and cantaloupe as a bit of a salad. You do have salt and black pepper. Black pepper will be fine with that. Olive oil you have. That's of the limited things that you have. Local lettuce. Honestly, you could throw the whole heads on the grill and have that be part of the side dish for the
that would be fun.
That rockfish stuff with the crab loaf. I don't know what else. You give me nothing. You give me nothing to put in there with it.
That's the point.
Anyway.
All right. There you go.
All right. Well, that's... Yeah, you're right. Chef, it was a challenge.
That was a challenge.
Your kitchen didn't work and...
Yeah, my kitchen didn't work. I think that's a bit of a challenge.
I did the shopping like...
I don't know, Tony.
The shopping like
an
idiot.
That might make it a little hard.
Yeah.
All right. I like La Plancha, though.
Anyway, great calls today.
Yeah, that was fun.
We really appreciate
people's
calls.
Yeah, thank you so much.
If you missed part of the program or you want to download... the entirety or any other program, please go to the Foreman Wolf website on the Foreman Wolf page on the WYPR.org website. You can email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. Thank you very much for listening.
And have a happy Sunday. Mm-hmm.